Welcome to Sports Rivals with Monty and Ernie. Lively, entertaining banter on sports topics you want to hear.
All right, everyone, wherever you are and however you may be listening, welcome to the April Fool's edition of the Sports Rivals, recording one day late. Because of Easter, hopefully you and your family had the very best Easter Sunday. Ernie, it's all about basketball again. We'll touch on the NBA as the NBA is coming down the stretch, but it's really all about March Madness, both the men and the women. I'm going to start off with the women because the game that everyone was pointing to just concluded. And so far, my understanding was the Gonzaga-Purdue game drew 3.9 million people. That was the highest watched men's basketball tournament game so far. I bet this LSU-Iowa game from tonight will do three times that game. I expect it to do probably north of 10 million because of all the publicity and all the pub. And Ernie, I know you didn't watch the game, but the game did not disappoint. High energy. Caitlin Clark, 41 points, 9 three-pointers, 12 assists. LSU Flauje Johnson was brilliant with 23 points. Angel Reese, 17 points, 20 rebounds, 4 block shots until she fouled out.
Did she do the hand?
Nope. They were completely professional all night. There was really no jawing back and forth. And then after the game, Caitlin Clark was very restrained, hugged Flauje Johnson, hugged Angel Reese. They were smiling and talking
good.
To each other.
That's
so
good.
I think they had an understanding that they will hurt more than help the women's game by the way they act. And they just competed. The energy level was extremely high. So congratulations to Caitlin Clark. I did not think Iowa had enough to knock off defending national champion LSU, but they did. Behind another all-world performance from Caitlin Clark. Currently, right now, in the other Elite Eight matchup, UConn is up 76-67 over Juju Watkins and the USC Trojans with less than a minute to go. So it looks like it's going to be NC State against South Carolina on one side, Iowa and Caitlin Clark against UConn and Paige Beckers on the other side. That's going to set up to be another must-see TV game on Friday night. But I know you didn't watch it, but it's crazy.
Yeah, that game is going to be interesting because Gino Auriemma had some kind of shade to throw at Caitlin Clark, stating that Paige was the better player, overall player. So, you know, I don't know how he sees that because all the advanced analytics point to Caitlin Clark.
Well, he's gonna endorse his player. I think that's for sure. I think the surprise that came out this week was South Carolina coach Dawn Staley saying that Paige Beckers is the most elite women's basketball player ever.
Dawn Staley, wow.
The South Carolina coach, said that about Paige Beckers. And then that was what was expected of Paige Beckers when she entered the NCAA 4 years ago, won National Player of the Year her freshman year, devastating ACL injury, really slowed her for the next 2 years. She's finally back to where she was her freshman year. And next year, she is coming back for her fifth year. Next year, between she and Juju and Flauje Johnson, they are going to be the face of women's basketball once Caitlin Clark moves on to wherever she decides to move on to. So, yeah, it's going to be another must-watch game. South Carolina should easily handle NC State, but I've been saying that about NC State men and women for the last month.
The men's
and
side.
It never really seems to take place. But the other game with South Carolina and with Connecticut and Iowa is going to be must-see TV.
Yeah, this UConn game versus USC on the women's side looks like it's academic right now. Under a minute to go, UConn up by 9, 76-67. So that's going to be a matchup to watch. That one, I'll take a peek. I was telling Monty off the air, I don't really watch women's basketball. I tried. It's just the disparity between the athleticism. If you watch women's basketball, I'll give you this. They play basketball the way Naismith made it out to be. The men just played above the rim. There's more physicality and whatnot. So there's that in play in the game. But the women, they play basketball the way it's supposed to be. From an entertainment standpoint, I was telling Monty, it's hard for me to watch because I'm used to all these high flyers and whatnot. You know, and I thought I'll watch women's soccer because the disparity between men's soccer and women's soccer, at least from the television standpoint, is minuscule. You can't see it because you're not going above the rim, really showcasing your athleticism. But in basketball, that's why they call basketball the greatest athletes on earth, because they are. I mean, the things they do on that basketball court are amazing. But again, not to throw any shade on women's basketball, I, you know, for all you women basketball players out there, no shade thrown on you. You guys do a terrific job out there. It's just from an entertainment standpoint, from me personally, it's, you know, I really got to get up for like a championship game or next week's game, Iowa versus UConn. That one I'll watch because of all the drama. And I like Paige, when she went to UConn, Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart kind of welcomed her to the, you know, the Massachusetts area. So I have that vested interest in her also.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be another must-see TV event on Friday night. I'm not sure it's going to eclipse what happened with LSU tonight, because so much anticipation of the rematch. But you never know. It's a Monday night, right? So on Monday night, what kind of ratings are you going to have? Last year, the championship game was on Sunday. This year, the championship game again will be on Sunday. If it becomes Iowa, South Carolina on Sunday, you're going to see massive ratings again. But I do think you're going to get another 8 to 10 million people tuning in for Paige Bueckers versus Caitlin Clark. And the thing with Caitlin Clark, see, I watched every single one of her games for the most part this season, either live or recording it. And she had struggled for the last month. It looked like she was trying too hard. Her shooting was off. All of a sudden, you get her out of Iowa and you put her in a neutral site, and her last two games are the best two games she's played since early in the year for me. You know, the last game, she went 12 of 20 from the field. She was driving the lane. She wasn't relying on the three-point shot. She went 11 out of 12 from two-point range, putting up monster numbers with 30-plus points and 15 assists. And then tonight, to go for 41 points, 9 of 20 from the three-point range, and 12 assists and 7 rebounds, completely controlling the game. That was as good a game as you'll ever see in basketball relative to the competition that you're playing. It was tremendous ball. Can she keep it going against UConn? We will see. We will see Friday night when they get to Cleveland. Again, it's South Carolina and Dawn Staley, the unbelievable coach of South Carolina, against North Carolina State. The 3 seed knocked off Texas, and then it'll be number 1 seed Iowa against number 3 seed UConn in the other semifinals. So it's looking like South Carolina against either UConn or Iowa. So it sets up to be marquee TV over the weekend. Now let's switch to the men. Again, that's Ernie Iamonte. Together we are the Sports Rivals, part of the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. On the men's side, all year long, I think we've been talking about, it seems like an inevitability that UConn, Purdue, and Houston, two of the three, would be playing for the title. Unfortunately for Houston, they lose Jamal Sheed early in the game against Duke. They could not recover. Duke knocked them out. But it's really, really looking like it's going to be UConn against Purdue come next week, Monday night. Your thoughts on the men's Elite Eight games and now what the Final Four looks like?
Yeah, I feel real bad for Sheed, man. I just looked at his face. I know he wanted to well up in tears. That guy was hurting. And if he was healthy, I'm sorry, Duke fans. Duke would have went down. I mean, that cast that hung around there all the way until the very end without Sheed. I mean, they leveled up their performance. That's meant to be. I mean, in any case, when you lose a star player, someone's going to step up, okay? But Sheed is that type of person. You know, I saw a lot of missed bunnies out there by Houston that I'm pretty much sure that if Sheed had the ball, you convert a couple of those. I mean, you could just start pulling away. I mean, all congratulations to Duke. You know, I think it leveled out afterwards when they lost their game. But Houston, I feel for you because my Celtics had the same types of injuries late that put in their demise. But the Final Four with Purdue, I knew Purdue was the only way that Purdue would have made it, in my opinion, is if they played Tennessee. Because both of those teams, I played deep into my brackets in previous years. Both teams let me down. And this year, they played each other. One of them had to advance, and it was Purdue. Edie was spectacular that game. I mean, all credit to Tennessee. They played a really good game in my part, but too much. It's just too much, Zach Edie. It's going to be interesting to see how, in my opinion, Dan Hurley, you know, if it gets to that championship, just thinking ahead, I mean, we still got the final four games to play, but if they meet into the championship, how are they going to, you know, address, you know, the big man in the middle? But yeah, terrific games. My Carolina team was out, so it kind of took the luster out of this tournament. And my brackets are like shot to death. So it's like, it's not, I wasn't even following it anymore.
See, so the Purdue-Gonzaga game, Gonzaga holds them to a 4-point lead at half. And it's a tale of two theories. Gonzaga made the decision they're going to pack it down on Zach Edey, guard him one-on-one, but play a tight zone. The trouble was Purdue came out smoking from the outside. They hit three after three after three. Even with that, it was only a 4-point game at the half. The second half, they decided they had to put more pressure on the three-point shooters, and they did, and then Zach Edey goes off in the second half. So it's kind of pick your poison. Ben Gray got into foul trouble. Anton Watson got into foul trouble. It was 53-51, and Purdue spurred it out. Tennessee. So this is, I completely agree with Ernie. I think I overthought this. Unfortunately, I blame myself for this because all year I've been saying UConn and Purdue, yet I expected Purdue to choke and get knocked out of this. Same with Tennessee. So I take Creighton, who has no history of advancing very far in the tournament. So I think I overthought this, but I think Tennessee gave the recipe that you're talking about. They made the decision that they weren't going to let Purdue's other players beat them, and none of them did. They locked them down. The trouble is Zach Edey went for 40 points, but it's not that he had 40, because they held Purdue to 72, which is great. The problem is Tennessee cannot score. Dalton Knecht goes for 37 points, but they only score 66. So the template, I think, is there. You keep everyone else from spurting out. You let Zach Edey get his 30 to 40 points if necessary, but you got to outscore them. And I think Connecticut is capable of outscoring them.
Yeah.
Plus, they have Donovan Clingan, who is a much better NBA prospect, 7'2", tremendous length, like almost 8-foot arm length. He's going to give Zach Edey trouble. And even if he gets into foul trouble, they got a backup. That is not quite as good. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting game. It's going to be a matter of styles. But Ernie, that 30-0 Connecticut run against Illinois
to embarrassing
the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half was unlike anything I'd ever seen.
Yeah, that was kind of embarrassing. While I was watching that, I felt bad for Illinois. They could do nothing correct.
Well, they just kind of imploded. All they kept doing was shooting three after three after three after three.
But even that, even on the defensive side, they couldn't do anything.
They were missing the threes, and UConn was just getting out in transition. It was either a dunk, a layup, or a spot open three.
It was crazy. They doubled. It was over when they doubled. It was like 23-46. I said, there's no way that Illinois can recover.
And it kept going. It went from 23-23 to 53-23. It was unbelievable. You're not talking about a scrub here. You're talking about the number 3 seed Big Ten champion Illinois, who would look brilliant so far this tournament. And they just got hosed by UConn. So far, that's 10 consecutive games for UConn over the last 2 years. that no one has come within 10 points of them. This year, no one has come within 17 points of them. And even that one, that Northwestern one, it was a 30-point lead that they got down to 17. They're destroying everyone. That Alabama game is going to be interesting. Alabama has been gritty. We watched them against that drag-out affair against GCU. Against North Carolina, they went toe-to-toe, found a way to win at the very end. Clemson holds Sears to 1-7 in the first half. He goes 7-8 from 3 in the second half. They score 89 points on Clemson, and nobody else could score anything on Clemson through the first three games.
They're going to have to score 90.
They're going to have to score, and I just don't see it. I don't see Alabama being able to stay within 10 points of Connecticut, but you never know. But let's talk about that other matchup, Purdue against the Cinderella NC State Wolfpack.
You know what? We shouldn't be surprised. I think the ACC was underrated this year, at least from not from the top, but from the top down. NC State, even though they were on the bottom half of the ACC, they're a 20-win game. They're a 20-win team, you know. In the ACC, you got Duke, North Carolina, Clemson, Virginia, VTech. You got all those, you know, really good teams out there. And it's really shown in this tournament how they blossomed together. And that ACC tournament where they came out and won 5 games in 5 nights to win that particular contest really reflected. I had them going into the Sweet 16. Nothing past that because I thought that would be a Cinderella. I thought they would catch fire. Never did I think that they'd get this far.
And they've earned it. I mean, they beat a 6 seed in Texas Tech. Then they got lucky. They beat Oakland. But then they beat the 2 seed in Marquette. And then they beat who was there. You know, they beat Duke after Duke knocked off Houston. So they've earned their way there.
They beat Duke twice in the tournament and in the AC tournament and this tournament.
Yeah, and Duke was up at halftime and NC State dominated the second half. They're just clicking on all cylinders. DJ Burns is just always smiling. Everybody loves him. Quick feet, 29 points against Duke. They're hitting all of their key shots. They're playing tremendous defense. So
when does the clock
we'll see him against Zach Edey?
When does the clock strike 12 for this Cinderella?
Probably Saturday. You know, but probably Saturday, but you know what? I'm not gonna rule it past them. They found a way to beat everybody else. I just think Zach Edey is gonna be a very tall task for them to be able to compete because he can just reach up and shoot over DJ Burns all day long. And if DJ Burns gets into foul trouble, everything kind of filters through him, either scoring or facilitating. It's going to be a challenge. But congratulations to NC State. The fact that you're an 11 seed and you're in the Final Four is a tremendous, tremendous success story for them. Coach is going to get fired. Now he's got a 2-year extension.
That's crazy. That's right. Yeah. That was the story going into the ACC tournament.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's amazing. So we have 1 seed Connecticut, 4 seed Alabama, 1 seed Purdue, 11 seed NC State on Saturday. I'm predicting a UConn-Purdue final. Are you
I'm predicting the same. I mean, as much as I want North Carolina State to win, to win that game, I think just the prowess of, like you said, Zach Edey there in the middle is going to overcome. I think it's just their turn. You know, this is the first time in how many years that they've reached the Final Four. It's going to be crazy, but that's and it's made for basketball. To me, with all the parity that's happening in the tournament this year, you know, having an 11th seed get in there, having 4th seed Alabama, and all those other seeds that reached, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, it would be nice to see number one versus number one. And I think in that last game, the number one team is going to win, which is UConn. They look unstoppable.
They really do. I mean, congratulations to Danny Hurley. I mean, they are.
I hate everything Duke. Dan Hurley is the man. He is the man.
Yeah, he's built a culture there. I heard a great reference today when I was listening to Sports Talk Radio. He has become Saban-esque in how he creates a culture of competitive team spirit. Their practices are as hard as they play in the game, and that is very hard to come by in today's day and age with these kinds of players that are very self-centered or NIL oriented. To get everyone to buy in is an incredible accomplishment. And just think, 2 years ago, after an early exit, he almost got fired.
Yeah,
that man. Connecticut would be kicking themselves right now because they are playing brilliant, brilliant, brilliant ball. So, not that we really want to go over this again, but in fairness, we do have to go through the highlights of our Hawaii Sports Peeps Bracket Challenge. It's come down to one of two people. My cousin Michael Bright is in first place right now. If Connecticut wins, he's going to win the title because all of us that chose Connecticut cannot pass him. He has max points available of 1360. If Purdue wins it, then my classmate Chad Hatayama, who's a Purdue graduate living up in Illinois, he'll win it because he has Purdue winning. In third place right now is my daughter Tiana. She also has Purdue winning the title. She's in third. Then my other daughter, Crystal, she's in fourth, followed by Chris Duda with the King of Hawaii. He's out because of Tennessee. My Kevin Miyakawa, he's out because of Tennessee. And then comes me in seventh. And Ernie is... Where's Ernie at?
Right behind you.
What? We were sitting pretty last week. We were sitting pretty. And then after Thursday night, and then especially after Friday night, the games are going on. I text Ernie. I said, our brackets are going to hell. And it did, you know, so we are out with no chance to win. I still want Connecticut to win the title so I can at least move up into the top half of the bracket.
I just want to get two.
And as long as Connecticut wins, we're guaranteed a top 5 foot finish. Anything other than that is going to mean that we are in trouble. Same is true on the Hawaii Sports Radio Challenge. That one as well. Ernie and I are towards the bottom and basically the same position because it's the same point total. So no repeat for Ernie this year.
No repeat. My big mistake was in this type of parity, like I said, with the transfer portal in play, picking three number ones to go into your final four was the big mistake. I mean, I should have known that, a lower seed, well, two number ones did make it, but, you know, lower seeds did prevail in this bracket, more so like in other years. I mean, last year we had the San Diego State. We had Florida, Atlanta, was it?
FAU.
Yeah, FAU, and even Miami.
Yeah, Miami, and San Diego State.
Yeah, they were.
You know, so it was all over the place.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the landscape with the transfer portal moving forward. That's going to be the landscape for things to come. Don't make the mistake that me and Monty made this year, which we picked three number ones going into the final four. That's very unlikely to happen in the future.
Well, it was fool's gold because I still think Houston probably would have made it had he not gotten hurt.
You're right.
And we should have took Purdue. I mean, we outsmarted ourselves because of their last 2 years. When the whole year you and I have been saying it looks like a showdown. Anyway, we picked the wrong number one. We picked his stupid North Carolina Tar Heels. We thought they had the easiest road, and they were the first one out. But anyway, can you tell we're salty?
We're salty. This is embarrassing, folks. This is embarrassing because I've never been this low.
All right, so one last thing that we wanted to talk about a little bit because it was super interesting, something that came out earlier this week. Ice Cube and his Big Three organization. Those of you that are completely unfamiliar, I'm not sure. This has been around now for about 5 years. During the summer months, they play half-court basketball with mostly older former NBA players like Katina Mobley is a big star, coached by people like Gary Payton and the likes. Ice Cube offered Caitlin Clark $5 million to play one season, 10 games, one season of the Big Three. I'm very curious to hear Ernie's perspective on should she take the $10 million? The starting salary in the Denby NBA, believe it or not, is $76,000. Now, granted, they have a short season, but longer than 10. So at this point, if you're Caitlin Clark, do you jump on the big guaranteed $5 million payday, or do you defer that and not play, not go down the route of, shall we say, Michelle Wee, who went chasing the men and it kind of, you know,
sent
her career off the rails. Now, injuries played a role into that, but her, she was so determined to play with the men, it never materialized, and it kind of took away what looked to be a guaranteed Tiger-esque type of a, and it never materialized. She won a handful of tournaments, and that's really it. What would you do if you're Caitlin Clark?
I mean, for me, Caitlin Clark has all the makings of being able to keep up with these guys, but the physicality of the men's game, and these guys are probably getting paid 1/100th of her salary. I mean, I bet you can put the three teams, all their combined salary together, it's not going to equal the $5 million that Caitlin Clark's going to get. She's going to be hunted. She'll still make her outside shots. She will not have an inside game. I can guarantee you that, because they're going to muscle her out. I don't care if these guys are like 40 years old. I mean, they still got the girth part about that, I mean, in them. I mean, it showed in a lot of games. To me, Caitlin Clark has too much to lose on her endorsement. Right now, she's a Cinderella darling, you know. And a lot of it is buoyed because she is like the female face. She's basically the female Kobe Bryant, I think, as far as star power is concerned. Because she has all these people looking up to her as an idol. She tarnishes that image by going into the men's game. She's playing with a lot of endorsement money. You mentioned $76,000 in the WNBA. That is peanuts compared to what she can make on the endorsement side. I mean, just by commercials alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, too much money. I mean, not that it might make up in 1 year, but over the long term, I think she's playing with fire. I would say stay away from there. Do what, you know, do the NBA thing and challenge Steph Curry to a three-point contest and maybe beat him, you know. But on the men's side, there's too much risk reward. Do I think that she can compete? I think she can compete. She can be a good three-point shooter out there. I think, but, you know, on the men's side, it's just a different game. Even though that they're old and everything like that, the risk versus the reward, I mean, $5 million is a lot of money to you and me, to even probably her and her fellow, you know, competitors in the WNBA. But this girl is special, and she can make a lot more money, not in her realm of basketball, but in the realm of the TV world.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I totally get it from Ice Cube's perspective, because It's a fun league. I mean, every once in a while, I'll turn it on and I'll watch it for a little bit. I mean, it's first to 25 in the first half, first to 50 in the end of the game, to watch some former, not even greats, but some former NBA players just play at it. It reminds me of if me and Ernie were playing outside before hip replacement. So I totally get it, because it would be box office, and for sure he would make his $5 million back in TV revenue and sold out arenas, I think, at least initially. And because it's only 10 games and they play in a different city every time, he would sell out every arena for those 10. So I totally get his willingness to invest that kind of money. Certainly some of the guys would probably be habuts, but I'm guessing all of their salaries would be bumped up as well, anticipating the revenue influx that's coming in. So maybe they support it. Now, should she do it? Probably not. I mean, I think she's so competitive in the way that she's wired, and it's a half-court game, you know, so it's completely different. Could she shoot, stay on the perimeter and just shoot, not have to really battle? She could, but I think she's wired differently. She's ultra-competitive, and I think she's going to want to challenge herself against the best in her sport, which is the WNBA. So I think she's going to go. The only way she would consider something like this is if she signs a shoe deal with, say, like a Nike. And Nike says, we want you to do this. We're going to sign you to a $100 million deal, a lifetime contract. Then maybe she does it if that's what Nike wants. She's a superstar, unlike anything anyone has ever seen in female sports. But she's not – I can't see Nike giving her $100 million right
I can
now.
See her, I can see them giving her $30
million. Yeah, over like 6 years. So say a $5 million a year. So I think – but so I think Nike would do that regardless of what she plays, I think. But I agree with you. I think she's going to go the WNBA route. Her salary may be different. I think she also – you could see the burden she assumed in carrying college basketball really for the last couple of years. I think she understands her opportunity to elevate everything about the WNBA and all of the wages that the women currently enjoy. It's kind of like what Tiger did in golf. You know, the purses quadrupled because of him. I'm not saying that that's going to happen just because of Caitlin, but I think she is the catalyst that no one has seen before be able to come in and take over that mantle of a face of the WNBA.
Yep, she's going to be the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson of the NBA. I mean, they're the OGs of, you know, getting revenue, getting that revenue stream, you know, into the NBA. And everyone who's reaping from it now need to go back and, you know, thank those guys. Michael Jordan also being one of them. Those guys really brought money to the sport.
Definitely.
I mean, if you
not so much Larry Bird, but Magic Johnson.
And if you haven't watched Air, go watch that movie. I mean, it's a great movie. It's a great documentary about Nike signing Michael Jordan to the contract. He could have gone to Adidas. I mean, he was an Adidas man. I mean, it took something special for them to bring him over to Nike, but. Boy, did that turn the fortunes of many an NBA athlete after him. You know, now the shoe contracts nowadays are worth more than your NBA salary.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So she has that opportunity. I think she's going to stick with the WNBA. She's in a good position. She'll be drafted number one by Indiana, who had the number one pick last year. So Aliyah Boston from South Carolina was last year's number one pick. Now Caitlin Clark comes in. You have the back-to-back number one picks on the same team. That should elevate that team. Indiana's really close to Iowa. So she's an absolute icon in that entire area. I think it sets up well for her that she's going to more than be able to make up the $5 million that Ice Cube is offering to stay in the WNBA. But what an interesting thing to come out during the final four preparations or trying to get to the final four for Caitlin Clark. The other thing that involves Caitlin Clark is she was the only college player invited to the Women's Basketball Olympic Camp. All the usual pro superstars, she's the only collegiate. But now that they made the Final Four, the camp is the same time as the Final Four. She's not going to be able to attend the Olympic camp, meaning she may have to sit out the Olympics this year because she's unavailable for the camp. We'll see if that holds true or they make an exception for her. But I think right now she is focused on trying to win her first national championship and try to get out of there with that. So a lot of college basketball talk. We are set again. The women's on Friday, Sunday, and the men on Saturday and Monday. It's going to be a barn-burning weekend, which I think will result in Connecticut on the men's side and Iowa on the women's side. Because I think their hardest match was going to be LSU today. I think they can beat South Carolina like they did last year in the Final Four, although they'll have revenge on their mind. So it'll be interesting. So let's transition to the NBA again. That's Ernie, I'm Monty. Lakers are hot until they played Indiana the other day. Still battling for the ninth spot, even if we've won eight of our last nine.
LeBron had
9 out of 10 from three last night for 40 points. They're on a streak where they have to win. They beat the Nets. They got to beat the Raptors tomorrow and then the Wizards the next night before coming home and closing with a very hard schedule. It is what it is in the West. It's still a free-for-all. I'm not even going to talk about that. Boston loses back-to-back games to the Hawks. Who cares? Nobody really cares about that. Since then, they've won a couple. They're in cruise control, and it gets more and more easier. The Bucks look, the Knicks aren't going to get their guys back, it doesn't look like. It doesn't look like Randall or Anunoby is coming back this year. That was the only team that I think could compete. Even if Embiid comes back with a handful of games left, they can't beat Boston with all of them healthy. They ain't going to beat him with him missing 3 months and then coming back.
Yeah.
It's going to be sweet, smooth sailing for your Celtics until they get into the finals.
Yeah, I kind of think so. I mean, they lost 2 to the Hawks, but you know what? That really didn't mean anything. They've won 20 out of the last 23 games. So you got to take a look at the big picture. When you're up that much, they've already locked up first place in the East. If they beat OKC on Wednesday, they'll lock up the number one seed throughout the NBA playoffs. So, I mean, and that's with 6 out of their next 7 games at home. So I'm pretty sure Boston will win one of those 7 games at home when you got to play Charlotte.
They still have 7 games left?
Yeah, 6 or 7. I think 7 games left.
What are they? 59 and 16, so 7
games. Yeah, 7 games. And 6 of them are at home. They have Washington.
Yeah, they have OKC. Then OKC at home, the Kings at home, the Blazers at home, at the Bucks, the Knicks at home, the Hornets at home, and the Wizards at home. Oh my gosh. They're going to mail this in.
Yeah, this is going to be...
It depends on how hard they want to try.
It's been on many a press conference already that Joe Mazzulla is experimenting. And, you know, when that 30-point loss was unexcusable, but the second loss to the Hawks was truly an experiment. Hawks were hunting Porzingis. Joe Mazzulla did no adjustments. He wanted Porzingis to figure it out. It ended in an overtime loss to the Hawks. So I'm not worried about that at all. Like you said, they're on cruise control. They just want to remain healthy going into the playoffs. And I think these games on out, I don't think they're going to play any. I think they're going to play OKC tough with all their players. After that, they're not going to play anyway. The Bucks, I'd be surprised if they have a full lineup against the Bucks. And Washington may beat the Celtics on that last game.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to play anybody. Anyone. Yeah, so that's the Celtic schedule. So I told you that the Lakers are at the Raptors, at the Wizards. After that, they host the Cavs, the Timberwolves, the Golden State Warriors. Then they end the season at Memphis and at the New Orleans Pelicans. So that's going to be a struggle down the stretch because the Cavs are still fighting for position. The Timberwolves are still fighting for the number one seed. The Warriors are still fighting to get into the playoffs. And the Pelicans are fighting for the number four seed. So it's going to be an uphill battle for the Lakers. Encouraged by the way that they played recently. Again, they're now 9 games over 500, which is a season high. Weren't the Celtics 9-0 to start the season? We're 9 games over 500 with 7 games to play. We'll see. I mean, like I said, I think the Lakers can beat anyone except the Nuggets a 7-game series.
And that's what they got. They got to get out of that 9-10 spot. Because at that 9-10 spot, and right now, who knows? Maybe the Nuggets don't get the number one seed because they've lost to Minnesota. And I think the Nuggets need that number one seed. I think if the Nuggets drop to 3 and Minnesota climbs to 2 or 1, Minnesota's got an advantage because Minnesota has beaten the Nuggets twice. And those two games weren't close. Everybody was worrying about Boston losing to the Nuggets twice. Those two games were all the way down to the wire, one possession games within a minute of the ending of that game. The Minnesota Nuggets game were both double digit losses. One near 20, and it was basically, I mean, the defense that Minnesota poses, the matchup that Minnesota's defense poses for the Nuggets is scary. And if Minnesota has a home game advantage, I'd be worried if I was a Nuggets fan.
an hour.
But you're not a Nuggets fan.
I'm not. But if you're a Denver Nugget, I don't think you're really worried. I mean, Jamal Murray has been sitting out, so he didn't play that last game against Minnesota that they lost. He didn't play. He hasn't played in a week or so. So I think they're trying to get him completely healthy with his knee before the playoffs. I think the Nuggets are pretty confident that they can win wherever they need to win. I don't think Minnesota has enough yet to get there without Cat.
Well, Cat is the offense. He was never a really good defender.
He's not a good defender, but I think Nikola Jokic, Gobert is great, but I think Jokic will find a way to either use his passing if he's not scoring. Yeah. He'll find a way to incorporate everyone else. Only thing is, if Jamal Murray is not healthy, then all bets are off.
Yeah, and as much as I like Jamal Murray isn't worth 17 points, in my opinion. That's going to be a tough game. You have your opinion. My thing is that I think that's going to be a rough... I don't see Denver taking this. This is going to go to 6 at least.
And it might. I still believe Denver's biggest threat is the Phoenix Suns. For whatever reason, Phoenix beat them twice last year in the playoffs. That was the only team that beat them last year in the playoffs.
It's matchups.
It's matchups because they have... The strength of Phoenix is not the strength anyone gets hurt and there's not a lot of depth, but
and if you remember those games, Phoenix had the lead. They ran out of gas.
Yeah, you know, so I think Phoenix is the scary team there, but Phoenix is like hot and cold right now. They're hit and miss.
They're winning
some brilliant games and they're losing some head scratchers. It's kind of all over the place. But again, with these veteran laden teams, you don't know how motivated they really are right now. Other than Golden State, who has to win to get in, because Houston is right on their tail.
They're not going to get past.
Oh no, they're not. But they're the only ones that's ultra motivated that they have to continue to win. I think the Lakers are like, it is what it is. Are we realistically going to go and gain 3 games on the Pelicans in a week? I doubt it. So I think the Lakers are resigned to the fact that they're going to be in the play-in. The next goal would be to try to catch up 2 games on Sacramento. But they have the tiebreaker on us, so it's 3 games. So again, it doesn't look likely that the Lakers are going to be able to move up from that 9th spot.
I still believe as long as they don't match up with Denver, because Denver's got their number, I think they got a shot. I think they can get out of the play-in tournament. It's just a matter of who do they face in that first round.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers are capable of playing and beating anyone. I think they've shown that. They've stepped up in big games against all the big names. They just can't beat Denver, and they can't beat Sacramento for whatever reason. So we'll see. Now, top 5. It's kind of hard because, again, with me, it's Boston and Denver and then the rest. Nobody really cares. So for me, I'm sticking with OKC at 3. I'll go Minnesota 4 and the Bucks at 5. Although, you know what? I'm going to drop the Bucks and I'm going to put the Lakers back in the top 5 again.
He don't care. He don't care. You know why? Because Austin Reeves and his thing is at least a second team All-NBA.
Second team. He's probably top 5 for the MVP. So that'll be my official. I'll go Boston 1, Nuggets 2, OKC 3, Timberwolves 4, Lakers 5. As the hottest team in Los Angeles.
I'll mirror that up to 4. Number 5, I have to put in the Bucks. In all seriousness, I'm going to put in the Bucks. But it's a real close match. I think the Dallas Mavericks, they've been playing great.
They've been playing really great ball.
Houston has played great ball. They've lost recently. I think they lost today.
Well, they lost to Dallas yesterday to snap their 11-game winning streak.
To lose their win. They've been playing great ball. I'm not sure how Orlando's been doing in the east side, but they were playing some good ball. I mean, those teams, if they get in, they catch fire. They can be the NC State of the NBA.
And there's a lot of talk now that Luka is catching the Joker in terms of MVP.
Oh, did you see that?
Now that they're 45-29 and on a 7-game winning streak.
Did you see that scoop shot that he did the other night?
Oh, no,
oh my God, from the 3-point line. Even go bring it up on YouTube. It was an incredible shot.
I mean, he is offensively, he's brilliant. I still think Joker is more of a winning player than Luka.
Yeah.
But he's hot at the right time, and voters remember what happens last oftentimes. That's why Embiid ran away with it last year. So it'll be interesting. Again, Ernie's in cruise control. He has nothing to sweat at this point in time other than injury. But I think Boston is doing a very good job of resting Jrue Holiday to get him healthy and keeping everyone else relatively fresh. I've been saying this for months. Boston is set up. If they don't win this year, it would be a huge disappointment, I think, for Ernie.
I will seek therapy if they do not win this year.
Because everything is setting up brilliantly for them. Home court, the East is weak. They're rested. Their players are going to be rested going into the playoffs.
I will seek therapy.
Everything is set up for them to win. It's going to be painful when the Lakers knock them off in Game 7 in the Garden. That would be his worst nightmare. All right, other than that, there's nothing really going on in the NFL at this point in time. I'm going to switch to my closing thought. Ernie alluded to it a little bit earlier in regards to the ACC. And my thing is, with the committee, how did they get it so wrong, I believe, with the ACC and with the Big East? As much as Hawaii is a participant in the Mountain West in terms of football and used to be in terms of everything, I think it seems really awkward at this point in time when, in retrospect, to look back at the tournament to see that the Mountain West got as many teams as the ACC and the Big East combined. It just seems illogical when the ACC had three teams in the Elite Eight, and the one of the four teams that made it in that didn't make it was a number one seed with North Carolina. And this is really the basis of my closing thought, is that in the olden days, this goes back to the complete fascination with everything to do with analytics and metrics. In the past, Ernie, I'm not sure if you remember, I think as short as 5 years ago, the last 10 games of the season held weight. They looked at who's hot at the right time, at the end of the year. Metrics and analytics have made every single game equal. So if you play in the beginning of the year, you're bringing in 9 new players like Alabama, for example. They're not going to be anywhere near as good in the beginning of the year, like Gonzaga, who are a completely different team at the end than they were in the beginning. But the losses in the beginning of the year, while they're getting used to each other, hold the same weight as the things that are happening at the end of the year. So you're not necessarily getting the best teams heading into the tournament. You're looking at a full body of work. And what does that body of work entail? That means that you have to win from the very first game of the year, which is unrealistic, because the whole premise of sports is to be peaking at the right time. NFL, Major League Baseball especially, it's all about who is hot at the right time. And in this particular case, sometimes the hot teams are not even allowed to participate because of what they did early in the year. So I'd like to see a little bit more subjectivity come into play, where you have some dialogue, and not everything is not KenPom and RPI and this metric and
quad four wins.
And who determines what the quad one win is? Those quad one wins, like for example, is determined by your records in the beginning of the year.
At that time.
Right. So that determines if you're a top 50 team, making it a quad one win. And it's very hard to move past that. So I just believe that I'm a numbers guy, so I like analytics, but it kind of be the be-all, end-all. Yeah. Like, they have projections in bracketology that almost exactly gets everything correct before the discussion. And I think that's just a little asinine, that you don't have some subjectivity, some discussion, some credence into why was this team weak in the beginning of the year, and are they peaking right now? Is there a logical reason for that, or are we just going to say every game is equal? So I kind of disagree with that. I think the ACC has proven that they're a much better league than people thought. A lot of people said they're top heavy. North Carolina, Duke were really good. Everybody else sucks. Well, Clemson came in sixth in the conference, and they were in the Elite Eight. NC State came in 10th in the conference, needed to win 5 games in 5 days to get in there. Duke came in second, and Duke came in fourth, I believe, or third. I think Duke was third and Virginia was second, I think the way it ended up. And they were in the Elite Eight as well. So same with the Big East. I mean, have you seen this UConn team? Seton Hall beat them. Yet Seton Hall wasn't good enough to get into the tournament over some of the teams that did get in. That seems really illogical that you can have a 1 seed in Connecticut, a 2 seed in Marquette, a 3 seed in Creighton, and nobody else in the conference makes it in. It just doesn't seem illogical. So NCAA, stop just dealing with analytics and start talking, using some subjectivity, looking at who is hot at the right time of the year and giving at least some credence to that. That's my closing
point. I agree with you 100%. I don't think it's really the NCAA. I think it's the basketball NCAA because football does it differently. Football does take into account and they do readjustments because they play less games. Mm-hmm. So there isn't that, a 30-game sample that you take a look at. You're looking at 12, 13 games in some cases where they reevaluate how teams end at the end of the year and then project out. That's why you see some teams who are ranked like fifth jump into the number 3 seed.
Well, that's why Florida State was left out this year.
Yeah.
Granted, it was from an injury, but that injury takes into account subjectivity in terms of making your decision making. If you just went by the numbers, Florida State needed to be in.
Yeah, and I agree. Florida, but that's gonna be rectified next year when they go into the expanded playoff system. But I agree with you. What really kills me is on the professional level. This exists too because TJ Watt, my goodness, he stays on the outside where Garrett can move anywhere he wants to go, you know, and part of that metrics on how he's teamed is based on double triple teams. You know, from the outside, who's going to triple team TJ Watt on the outside edge? It's never going to happen, not at the frequency that Garrett will face when he chooses to attack from the interior. So I agree with you on top of that. There needs to be subjectivity in how they do. It's a work in progress, you know, and eventually I think the minds will figure it out as, you know, you get the 11th seed, and God forbid the 11th seed gets into the championship match. That's going to make a major revamp into the system.
Yeah, but the only reason they're in here is because they won the tournament. Yeah,
they'd be NIT champions right now if they weren't playing, because they've been playing terrific ball. But I agree with you 135%.
All right, I'll take that. Anytime Ernie agrees with me, I will certainly take that. So again, we're thankful for the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. We are a part of their team. Expanded now, Wake Up in the Den, 2-hour shows from 8 a.m. till 10 a.m., 760 a.m. and 760 a.m. and 95.1 FM on your dial. Kule and Paul Breck every single morning. Again, you can get all your USC sports now. Shohei left the Angels, so we no longer carry California Angel baseball. We're a Seattle Mariner organization now. So for all your Seattle Mariner games, you can check that out again on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. Clipper basketball is still there for the time being. And of course, Dallas Cowboy football in the fall. But they do an incredible job. OIA Sports, they're going to take us all the way to the end. Congratulations to them. Again, HawaiiSportsRadio.com, HISportsRadio.com. You can listen to everything there, including the Sports Rivals podcast. We are up on their website every Monday. You can listen to the Sports Rivals podcast on Hawaii Sports Radio, HISportsRadio.com. Ernie, anything else?
I'm good.
All right, and again, reminder, check us out on social media, Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, and Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. And until next week, when the champions are crowned, the Sports Rivals are out.
Thank you for joining us on the Sports Rivals Podcast. Check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcast on Instagram and at Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter, where you can share topics you'd like to hear.